Choose. Recorded live.
Hello and welcome to Welcome Changes Radio, talk radio for your mind-body-spirit connection. I am your host, Val Magellan, the Queen of Joy, calling you from the second coldest place in the world. We were at minus 36 Fahrenheit with the wind chill this morning. It was a brisk and chilly one today, but I've got something really wonderful and warm to share with you, so the cold just doesn't matter no matter where you are in the world. I have a very, very special guest to share with you today. He's been here once before, and I'm excited to bring him back to share with you his newest and latest book. Mike Dooley is best known for his Notes from the Universe emailings and books, contributing to The Secret and his New York Times bestseller, Infinite Possibilities, The Art of Living Your Dreams. Mike lives what he teaches, traveling internationally, speaking on life, dreams, and happiness. And his newest book is Manifesting Change. It couldn't be easier. Welcome to the call, Mike.
Hey, Velma. Thanks for having me. Nice to be back with you.
So I'm excited to have you. We've been friends for a good number of years, and I know that for myself, I have just learned oodles upon oodles of good, juicy stuff, and I'm always learning from you. I was reading through your book, preparing for our interview, and, you know, even just some of the simplest things pop out at me and go, yes, don't forget this, and don't forget this.
We all need to be reminded, and sometimes I feel like I'm blessed to be teaching this, because the more I share it and espouse it, the number one person who hears it first and foremost is me. And it's funny, you know, even for me, and I don't mean that to sound as conceited as that just came out, but being alive in this at this primitive juncture in time and space, spiritually speaking, as I've often said, it's like we've just crawled out of the caves, you know, in hindsight, one day with eternity before us, you know, in the year 10,000, you know, 500, the landscape will be so profoundly different. There'll be love, there'll be sharing, there'll be enlightenment, there'll be support, there'll be tolerance all over this planet. And they'll look back to these times that we now chose to be alive in as the wild, wild west. They're going to be like, those people were crazy. They would make bombs and throw them at themselves. You know, they would take drugs to alter their mind. They would, you know, they had no idea that they were creators. They thought that life was happening to them, and they didn't know the simple, obvious truth that we all know now, that we happen to life, that we came first, and that all things are possible. It's gonna be a wild comeuppance. And you know what? It's going to be us who are coming back. So we'll know, you know, through living multiple lives, the firsthand what it was like, because it was us.
Oh, we'll be sitting there going, snicker, snicker, can you believe what we did?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, actually, you know, we'll probably be doing that within this lifetime. I've already done that a few times already. Can you believe the clothes I wore?
That's funny. That's true.
So now the first question I want to ask you, I know it's been asked before, but it's really worth repeating. So I'm going to ask it again anyways. What is the number one thing that is holding people back from living their dreams? Oh,
I love that question because it's been asked a lot, like you said. And I think my take on it might be a little bit different, although it encompasses the many true answers that exist. The number one thing is simply not knowing the truth about reality, you know, knowing the absolute objective truth. And it's such a simple truth. We are creators. We are the eyes and the ears of God. We are God come alive in the dream of here and now at our choosing. And we're here to decide what we're going to do with our lives. We're here to experience it. We're here for the adventure, for the love, for the joy, for the possibilities that exist. But not knowing this, there goes your power. Because if you think, oh, great, there's a law of attraction. Oh, great, the universe is conspiring on my behalf. But you can't explain, you know, karma fully, or you can't explain whether or not God's judging you, or there's some things you feel that are not to be known by mortal minds. Well, behind those question marks, there goes your power. And the analogy that I've been using now on this recent tour that I just did is, you know, if someone believed, hypothetically, that life was hard, that people are mean, that opportunity only knocks once and it's only the early bird who gets the worm, how eager would that person be to get out of bed every morning when the alarm clock goes off? And that's how understanding foils us. That's how it dampens our energies and enthusiasms. Whereas if someone knows the truth, which is so knowable when you ask the hard questions, you see that there are easy answers, that we are divine, that we chose to be here, that we're inclined to succeed, that it's way harder to fail than it is to succeed. Our lives are proof of this. We smile more than we frown. We have money more than we're flat broke. We have friends more than we're alone. We have health more than we're ill. When we see this obvious truth and we realize that our thoughts literally become the things and events of our lives, that we are the architects and the designers of our lives right now, that we're not subject to karma, that ancient spiritual contracts cannot undermine us. When we know this, how excited would we be, hypothetically, to get out of bed each morning? Yeah. We would be really annoying to most of the average people in the world because we'd be so filled with enthusiasm and passion and ready to get going. We would be thrown into action. Even the baby steps would be fun to take because we would know that's how you instigate life's magic. And so we would take them with a glad heart. We could enjoy the journey at long last with a glad heart. And this not knowing these simple absolute truths is the number one thing that holds people back.
Well, I know some of the most powerful shifts that I've experienced was understanding that anything that does happen is for my benefit. Even if it doesn't look like it from the beginning.
Exactly. And it is, especially when you understand that we're eternal beings and that everything adds to us. And even if there was such a thing as a so-called mistake, and really they're not when you put everything into context, you'd realize that it's going to enable you to not make it again. So it was a powerful step upwards on this ladder to ascending into the life of your dreams and total understanding of how reality works. It was kind of, I don't want to argue for limitations, but par for the course when we choose to be born into primitive times, spiritually speaking. We knew ahead of time that, hey, you know, if you go there then when it's really dark, you're very likely going to stub your toes. And that doesn't mean when you stub your toes that you made a big mistake and that your life's a shambles, because always where you are is not who you are. And where you've been does not indicate where you're going. So stub your toe or not, you've still got all of your power. You still have infinite possibilities before you in this very lifetime to find joy, to find happiness, to live in abundance, or whatever it is for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it kind of reminds me of, like, with me being a parent, my son, who is now 9 years old,
wow.
when a child is really young, I think it's up until age 3, when they look in the mirror and they see themselves, they think they're seeing another baby. They don't think they're seeing themselves. And I kind of get that same impression.
Wow, that's good. That's exactly right.
That's kind of what we do in the bigger picture of our lives.
That's exactly. What a great analogy and metaphor. I mean, we look at the world around us and we think, that's not me. It's like, no, that is you. That is you. The sky, the beauty, the harmony, the abundance or lack thereof is a reflection of all of your thoughts, beliefs, intentions, expectations, etc. And the great news is if you don't like it, which is very often the case when you're new at this stuff because it seems kind of alien and cold, well, hey, you can change it on a dime. In your mind, worlds are born when you choose new thoughts and something new to focus on, but you got to hold on to those new thoughts and hold on to that focus while taking baby steps in their direction before the rest of the physical world catches up to you. But it is this easy, and again, people can be daunted, like, oh, God, look at this. And you're telling me I created this? You know, it's like, yeah, but you can recreate it easily when, and back to your question, when you understand the truth. Not understanding the truth makes you feel helpless, makes you feel like a victim, makes you feel like life happens to you, and there goes your power. It's the number one thing, and that leads, kind of makes me think of the chapter in Infinite Possibilities, my book that came out a year ago, and the audio program that came out almost 10 years ago, there's a chapter in there that says, understanding is the elixir, which is the tonic, the soothing balm, the soothing lotion of life. And it is. It greases all the wheels. Understanding makes you realize you're not alone. Understanding enables you to focus on what's right. Understanding can turn poverty into abundance, illness into health, loneliness into friends. That's understanding. And in fact, I know I tend to go on. You can just chop me off if you want. But Richard Bach's Titanic bestseller, Illusions, which is probably 25 years old right now, along with a book I recently read by Dr. Todd Michael, The Evolution Angel. They both said the same thing, and it ties in exactly with what I'm sharing about understanding. When you get this life, when you really get this life, you automatically start getting miracles. Automatically. You don't have to think of abundance to live in abundance. And this is one of the coolest things that I'm teaching right now with my tool, The Matrix, and we can talk about that if you like in a moment. But when you focus on happiness, you move in the general direction of happiness, however you define it. In terms of abundance, move that way. In terms of friends, health, in fact, on all of those fronts, move in that direction so that you can find happiness. When you've got the end result and you're moving towards it, defined as happiness in this case, abundance will automatically show up. You know, health is automatically a given. Friends automatically there in your life. You don't even have to visualize these things. Sure, thoughts become things, but the only way your thoughts of happiness can become a thing is if everything else materially in your life is going to be happy. And people will say, okay, Mike, I get it. Happiness is the ultimate end result. But what if that's all I get? And
what?
It's like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. They're thinking, and it's understandable from the perspectives that we're raised in, they're thinking that they could ask for happiness and then they would all of a sudden become this happy-go-lucky Forrest Gump kind of fool. Not that Forrest Gump was the fool, he's a great role model, but they'd be happy but broke, happy but sick. Like, I don't want to be happy and broke. I don't want to be just happy. I want to be happy and rich. And it's like I'm saying, you don't have to add that little addendum on there. True happiness, like that happy dance, that yahoo, woohoo feeling that you're feeling when you visualize hopefully every day for about, you know, 3 to 5 minutes is all you need to do. That going out onto the plane of manifestation sends shockwaves into the unseen that literally begin rearranging the players and circumstances of your life so that you'll be predisposed to so-called accidents, coincidences, and serendipities that will yield you being able to feel that joy again in every facet. You can only feel that kind of happy if everything in your life is working, you know, reasonably working. There'll still be challenges. That's part of the adventure. You never outgrow challenges, thank God, metaphorically, thank God. But this is how you kind of can imply and force that all things are going well in your life when happiness is what you focus on and happiness is what you take action on every single day, knocking on new doors, turning over stones with regard to work, with regard to friends, with regard to all the things that make you happy. Then the circumstances of your life begin morphing and they switch tracks and the miracles are tiny but many, so long as you're showing up every day taking action, which means usually the miracles are invisible until you have hindsight. You can say, wow, if I hadn't met Fred, you know, 6 months ago, he never would have introduced me to Trixie today, who's just rocked my world, kind of thing. And you see all of a sudden in hindsight that your path has always been strewn with miracles that were in the process of making your thoughts at the time become the things that you're now experiencing.
Well, and I know from my personal experience, that's exactly what has happened. Because, like I say, I mean, there's not anything. There's not one single thing that has happened in my life, and there's been some really goofy crap that's gone on in my life, but there's not one of them that didn't have a really valuable and potentially joyful end result. There's not one.
Right, and we're not talking, and this is for your listeners, we're not talking about that was good character building stuff that I just went through. I mean, it's way more than that.
Absolutely.
Everything plays to your greater good. Everything is playing to abundance, health, harmony, friends, laughter being added to your life. It's not just lessons that we need to endure and make it through and say, oh, wasn't that great? I'm a better person now. These lessons tangibly make our lives physically better. And there's nothing wrong with physical improvements or materiality. They're all just other shades of spirituality because there is only spirit.
Well, and is you actually have, just even in just in the first chapter here, there's a couple of questions that you put forward that I think really punctuate how a person can take this and use it to their advantage. One of the questions you have here, so there's something going on that doesn't look like it's for my highest good, but because I know that it's always for my highest good, there's just really it's just a shift in my perspective that needs to happen. What am I not seeing that's obviously there? How else can I view this situation? And I
exactly.
love those questions because I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that everything happens for my benefit. And if I'm freaking out over it, it's because there's a detail I'm missing.
Right. And let me add, for those going perhaps through personal crises right now, and I've been through my share, you've shared that you have. In fact, there's no one who hasn't gone through personal crises, and they'll rear their head from time to time. One of the nicest things about the way reality plays out and our adventure here is that you can do what we were just talking about and ask those questions you just asked. And often by asking, how else could I view this? What am I not seeing that's obviously there? Not only can you do that, but if it's a real heartache that you're going through right now, you've been kind of brought to your knees and your head is flooded with how and why and what's the point. The kind of soothing balm here is that in those kind of situations, I would often tell people who come to me or even myself if I'm going through them, look, it's not important to understand how you got where you are today or what exactly is going on or what the benefits are to be immeasurably enriched by what is going on. You know, I thought the train of my life had crashed 10 years ago, career speaking, and I couldn't figure it out. And I've met some people, I just got back from this 8-city tour today, 5 minutes ago, and I talked to some people who've been through some really heartbreaking situations, either career-wise or losing someone in their family, either through a divorce, separation, or death. And I've said to them, it's like, look, right now, just hold yourself together and do your best to see what your blessings are today apart from this circumstance. And even if you can't see those, the lessons are being instilled. You are growing. You are becoming more. And this thing that you're going through right now will make sense one day.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not it makes sense today is not important to getting the lesson. You're getting it. And it's like one of the books that I've read that I've enjoyed so much 30 years ago was the Seth, S-E-T-H, material dictated by the late Jane Roberts. And Seth would say of our nighttime dreams, it's not important that you remember them for the work to have been done. And people often say, well, I don't remember my dreams. And you say so much creativity and expression and lessons are experienced in our nighttime dreams, so am I at a disadvantage? It's like, it's not important. The work is done. And the same thing with crises. The work is done, and it's being done, and you're being healed, and you're being loved, and you're going to have a perspective in the near future, probably now you do and don't even realize it, that will serve you in ways, making things possible that were not possible before. So the bottom line here is you don't have to explain everything that happens to you. You don't have to worry about explaining anything that happens to you. All you have to know is when it comes to creating change, what the rules are. And the rules are thoughts become things, period. So define what you want in terms of the end result. Even if you're in pain right now, do it to the best of your ability or give yourself a week or 6 months. It's up to you. It's your life. But you're going to have to be firm with yourself eventually and say, okay, the grieving time is over and I'd like to create change and I'd like to be happy again, and that most certainly is an option. I've been at places in my life where I wondered if I'd ever be happy again. You know, I'm thinking specifically of broken hearts that I had. Mm-hmm. And boy, did I get happy again, happier than I ever was before. Although at that time that I was going through the heartache or the difficulty, I couldn't see how it could ever come to pass. I didn't think how I could ever be made whole again. But lo and behold, life's magic envelops you, and you are raised to a new place so long as you're firm with yourself, eventually, gently, you get back out there, you dust yourself off, you brush yourself off, you number one, have an end result. You know, I'd like to live in abundance. I'd like a new partner in business or love or whatever. I'd like to lose weight. I'd like whatever it is. Define it in terms of the end result without worrying about how you're going to get there, and every single day show up. Those are the two steps, the only two things you have to know. You don't have to know how you got here. You don't have to know what decisions brought you to time and space. You don't have to know why the business didn't take off or you're feeling pain right now. You don't have to know that. What you do have to know is that to change your present circumstances, and they are changeable, have an end result. In other words, have a dream, but don't worry about how. I call them end results. Know what your end results are, and then every day do something about it. Even if those baby steps seem feeble, even if you dream of champagne and caviar and you wonder, how can I get there if my only resources are going to the mall and working for minimum wage? If that's all you can do, do it. The only mistake you can make is not doing stuff, not being out in the world reachable by life's magic, because once you've programmed that magic with these end results, it's reaching to you. It's pressing it to you. And so long as you're taking the bus to work or walking if you have to, and you're out there, then you can meet a new person, you can have a new idea, you can see a billboard that sparks your thinking, that takes you to a different part of town, that introduces you to somebody else who 3 months later will introduce you to somebody else's. The miracles are unending so long as we're out there showing up, physically showing up.
That's right. That's right. Actually, and that brings me to the next couple of questions in that first chapter that I really loved. I highlighted. I end up with really yellow books when I get them. And that was, what am I not thinking of that I could be thinking of? And the other question was, what am I not considering that's otherwise obvious? And I think those are the opportunities to be playing with, you know, the end result, the potentiality of it all.
They are. And the questions, the answers could be, you know, are you messing with the hows? Are you attaching to unimportant details? Too often when people get excited about their creative power and the universe loves them and their thoughts become things, they try to rush out and micromanage their life. You know, get this car, that house, this lover. And it's like, wait, what I'm teaching now with the Matrix is, ideally, your most important end results should be generally stated. Now, that seems to contradict everything we've heard about deliberate manifestation, about getting into the details, but there's no contradiction. There's just a few nuances here that generally are not shared or taught. What we want to do by keeping what we're doing when we keep our end results, our desires general, is we're leaving room for even better than we knew to ask for, and we're leaving room for the universe, life's magic, to enter our affairs, if you will, our toings and froings, our dance with life, in unexpected ways. We're leaving the door wide open for better. And so people can grasp this generality thing versus the details. You know, what's better? Living an abundant, financially abundant life, or owning a Ferrari?
Well, and that's it exactly. Like, I've got myself, I have a really good example of that. When we moved to this particular community and we were out there looking for homes, it was such an exciting and fun time because it was just a little tiny window in time and space where all of a sudden there was all of these houses and opportunities for us to move into. And then it was literally a window, maybe a month, where there was all of these things available. So I sat down and I wrote down my wish list of what I wanted in a home and added that little or something better on the bottom.
Yes, same effect.
Yeah, because basically it says, this is kind of the idea, but if there's something better out there that I can have, I'm all over it.
That's
right?
Exactly what the Matrix teaches. So, and I say to do exactly what you're doing. Get into the details. People at first glance, you know, until they read the whole chapter or hear the whole talk, won't understand. They'll think the details, oh, the details are bad. It's like, no, the details are awesome. The details are what are going to get you excited about the perhaps vagueness of a cool rocking home. Well, what's a cool rocking home? Well, it could have a tile roof. It might have an acre of property. It might have swing sets or a pool. You know, it might have these things. But a cool rocking home is what you attach to. The details you don't. That way you leave something better. room for something better. So the details are great to visualize. Vision boards are awesome because they have all these details, so long as you're not attached to those details. The vision board should be reminding you with its details of your cool rockin' life. But it doesn't have to be that home on that hill. It doesn't have to be that circle of friends always laughing at your jokes. It doesn't even have to be that car. Although we can dabble with some of the minutia, we just don't want to lose sight of the big picture. And that's what the chapter in Manifesting Change, which is the book you're reading from, called Playing the Matrix, is all about.
You know, as I'm listening to you, I'm getting this visual of people walking around with their tools and hanging onto their tools so tightly they can't get the things they built with them.
Yeah, that's another... You're a good teacher, Velma. That's a great visual. That's a great visual. We get too hung up on trying to micromanage. And,
yeah.
We get in our own way.
Well, and I know for myself, I've been the greatest science experiment of my life because I watch myself.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you get into the different processes that you learn and then you add more processes. And, man, did I ever complicate my life?
Yeah.
You know, I really complicated it.
We do. And really, although I was reluctant to use the term the Matrix because it evokes a quantum physics and scientific approach.
No,
well,
I expect
life
you
is
to be wearing
black
sunglasses, a black long jacket,
yeah,
bending over.
But the Matrix simplifies things. There's six simple, friendly columns from which you can use to define what's important to you. One column is happiness. That's one end of the spectrum. Then we move across the spectrum where we start defining our end results materially, and there's nothing wrong with that. We just need to be aware of what we're doing and potentially how we might be limiting ourselves, but we deserve to have the material abundance that we dream of. And then the other end of the matrix is very specifically defined and often involves specific other people and other people's thoughts and decisions. Those are worst case curses, cursed howls when we totally give away our power.
Mm-hmm.
But it's simple, and everything I'm doing is trying to reveal the simplicity of living deliberately. It all boils down to three words: thoughts become things. And this matrix shows us how we can facilitate thoughts becoming things. And, of course, I talk about our words and our actions, but those are just forms of our thoughts with so much intensity that they roll off of our tongue or they throw us into action. And or we can deliberately choose words that may not be in alignment with some of our negative thoughts and choose actions that demonstrate positivity and thereby erode and eventually erase those invisible limiting beliefs that were perhaps holding us back without ever knowing what they were. And I always advocate, don't go looking for what's wrong with you, because you'll find stuff, and or worse, you'll make it up, and then you'll need 12 people to undo it. Instead of looking for what's wrong for you with you, look for what's right about you. Dwell on what's serving you. Dwell on what makes you happy. And as I said earlier, then to make change in your life, define it in terms of the end result generally. That's what you attach to. Get excited about it by visualizing details, not attaching to the details. And then just show up every day doing what your peers do. But some people will say, and rightly so, I know what it's like 10 years ago. I had no peers, you know. We had decided to liquidate the T-shirt gift business. And I was forced with starting my life over, seemingly. And I was like, where to begin with these feeble little baby steps? And I didn't even know what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And if that's where you're at, then typically the choices immediately in front of you will not look glamorous, and that's not a reason to not take baby steps. For me, metaphorically, the story has turned into a fun one to tell because people like the terminology I'm about to share with you, as unglamorous as it is. I had three paths in front of me. One of them sucked. The other one was suckier, and the third was the suckiest. And I say, you know, if you're at a crossroads in your life where you want to create great big change, that's generally what your options look like. Choose. Choose from the least sucky. Choose from the least of the unattractive. You know, if you've got the attractive option, go for it, and you're not really needing this conversation. But if you want to create great change in your life, then that means you're starting from a place that's not that pleasing. You got to start, though. So assess your options, and tomorrow morning do some web searching. Look at Craigslist if that's something that could open up doors for you. Interview, assemble the blueprint for the plan of your life, whether it's going back to school or hanging out at the mall more or signing up at Match.com, just do stuff. None of it's going to be glamorous. None of it will be, but as you do it and you do it well and you're choosing from the best of your options, which may not be that attractive, but you're choosing from the best, you will move forward in life. You will be in reach of life's magic. There can then be those miraculous coincidences, serendipities, and happy accidents that will not look even like serendipities. They'll just be, oh, I met somebody today. Oh, you know, another, I helped somebody out today with their blog. I did all of this stuff is fodder for the universe, dots, if you will, that it will connect. And you will look back over your shoulder a few months or a few years, and it's worth the wait, from now, and be blown away at how many miracles there were. And you'll see that there was not one dot, not one baby step you took, not one stumble or fall that does not play to your absolute greatness, that was not seized upon by life's magic and used as an ingredient to bring you the life of your dreams. And you'll look beneath your feet, and somehow that lonely dirt road, that sucky dirt road that you started out on, transformed itself into the life of your dreams. And you'll ask the question that I often ask myself this very day, how did I ever get here? This is so amazing. This exceeds the expectations I set for myself 10 years ago. And the answer, of course, is known. We're God. And we summon magic, and we summon the resources we need to complete the journey once we define the end result and get going.
Well, I think, too, one of the things that I've noticed is my dots are camouflaged sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And they're right there. They're obvious. They're easy. But they don't look like what I expect them to be. How does this have to do with what that I want? I have no idea. It doesn't look right, but I think what I use as my little indication, and this one took a few times of thumping me in the forehead, was it was easy.
Mm-hmm.
It was easy. If this is,
and it was the best of your choices at the time. So.
Absolutely. So
the other alternative is to wait at home for the ship of your dreams, but that's the only place it'll never find you.
Well, and I think, too, the one of the things that I've observed is that when I carry the energy of decisiveness, you know, like I make a choice, then that is an energy of movement.
Absolutely. And that creates exponentially more opportunities for life's magic to reach you. And when it does reach you, you won't even recognize it, but that doesn't mean it's not reaching you. So the modus operandi always needs to be, this is working. I get it. Every day I'm getting closer. Every day it's getting easier. Whether or not you can see that, you can know that. And I talk about that in the first chapter. You are an effortless creator. You can still deduce these otherwise obvious truths. Whether or not you can see them is unimportant. They will show up so long as you latch on to the simple, obvious truth of your inborn, natural-born creating abilities.
So for those of you who are listening, the book we're talking about again is Manifesting Change. It couldn't be easier. And we've been talking about The Matrix, which, just for your information, is on page 78.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I remember hearing you first talk about The Matrix, and my brain did a little lemon squeeze just at the word. But, you know, when you put the information up there in front of us and just started going, okay, look at this spot, look at this spot, look at this spot, it was just like, well, that's freaking simple.
Mm-hmm.
And it really simplified a lot of things that I knew, that I've been growing to know, and it just put it right out there in plain black and white. Well, yours was colored, but in the book it's black and white. Just black and white information that made it really easy for me to process and know where my tools belonged.
Yeah.
It organized my toolkit.
Yeah, well, that's the intent, so I'm glad to hear it worked for Velma. Thank you, Velma.
Well, and I'm not alone, so I'm sure it organized other people's toolkits, too.
Oh, thank you.
So, okay. So, onto the next question. Let's talk a little bit about spirituality versus religion. And this has been an arena that I've been playing in particularly lately, and I'm starting to see some parallels, and I'm starting to see where they are different too. So what's been your experience with that?
Well, my experience in a nutshell, from today's perspective, and I think I probably had this for a long time but never put it to words, mm-hmm. is that ironically, and I don't want to ruffle feathers because religion's a beautiful thing in many, many cases, and it's got many, the whole intention of religion is to bring people closer to the unseen and to let them know that they are more than the physical beings that they've become familiar with. But on the other side of the coin, because human beings kind of not only started this great thing going, but then they kind of muddied the water, and there was power grabs, you know, thousands of years ago to this very day within organized religion, that oftentimes they don't go together anymore. Spirituality and religion are at opposing ends of the spectrum. Spirituality, to me, is a recognition of the sublime. Spirituality to me is something that we all are of and will always be, that we're eternal, that there's more to life than we realize, and no matter what someone's persuasion is, they are a holy spiritual aspect or fragment, if you will, of divine mind. Spirituality is not exclusive. It includes everybody all the time, from the most vile to the most saintly. We're all doing our best, however we define our best, although some slip and fall and make hideous mistakes in the context of here and now, but in the context of eternity, it's all for the betterment of divine intelligence and ourselves, and there's always love and order, perfection and healing in every occurrence. So spirituality is. Whereas religion, you know, immediately kind of uses words and then doctrines and then there's rules and then there's exclusions, like, well, you're either with us or you're not, and God save you, literally, because there's fire and brimstone waiting for those who do not convert, or it's my ordained a right to take you out of the picture because you don't see things my way. You know, all of a sudden it becomes, you know, this tangled mess of judgment and tests, and, you know, I mean, there's one religion in particular that I know well of because I was raised in it, that teaches that you're born bad, that you're born broken, that you'll always be a sinner. And it's like, those are ridiculous notions. And although they sprang from good intent, all men are of good intent, all women, I say that inclusively, are of good intent, people not knowing any better, and here's where misunderstandings could trip us up and rob us of our power, you know, kind of cast God, if you will, in man's likeness, and think that it's a man, even a male figure, which is absurd. You know, it's neither male nor female. It's all things, including, you know, the mouse that sits on my desk that runs my computer. It's pure God consciousness. It's all God. But the message has gotten muddied to the point where they're almost at opposite ends of the spectrum.
Well, and that's I think that's been my experience, because I've been looking at the different aspects of a religion that's particularly close to home for me, because I was raised in it, mm-hmm. and
almost,
you know,
all of us were.
What's interesting is when I look at the foundation of where the information comes from, I'm like, okay, I learned that on my own, and I understand that. I see the truth in that, and I learned that on my own, and I see the truth in that. And so the foundation is the same, is mm-hmm. What I've come to understand. So it's been a really interesting journey for me. I think, you know, religion is spiritual, but all spirituality is not necessarily religion. It's one of those things.
Yeah, and that's where I'm at as well. So what I kind of advocate, and of course anybody steeped in old school religion would think I'm a heretic, but literally play both ends to the middle. You know, draw from religion the things that are beautiful, because you know just for how good they make you feel, the splendor, the love, the forgiveness, the healing, that they're spot on. But let go of the stuff that doesn't feel right, that you're bad, that people are bad, that you must grovel, that you can't want stuff for yourself, that the person's not important, that it's the community that's important, it's the afterlife that's important. That stuff doesn't make sense. It doesn't feel good to me, and I don't think it would feel good to most people. And so go with your heart. Your heart is inclined to see the best in people and the best in life. And I often quote, because I was raised a Christian of sorts, so I was raised a Christian and would not be a classical Christian by any stretch in today's world, by today's definitions. But I often will quote little things from the Bible because that's what I was raised on, like the truth will set you free. The truth being what I'm talking about, that God dwells within, that you're loved no matter where you've been, no matter what mistakes you've made. The other quote that I love is that I think with understanding, all things are added to you. And it's not with understanding. It's something along those lines. Believe and ye shall receive is another one. The list is endless. The prodigal child, I love that story. You know, the child, the son, who turns his back on his inheritance, goes out, trips, stumbles, falls, makes a mess of things, and then kind of sheepishly wonders if he can go back home. And in the instant he wants truth, if he wants to go back home, his inheritance is restored. And we are all that child. We've all kind of closed our minds or never knew to open them to the truth of life's magnificence and our power. Yet in the instant we wake up to the truth, in the instant we have understanding of life's magnificence, our sublime benevolent nature, our phenomenal power, it's restored. Our inheritance is at hand. You don't have to do so many prayers. You don't have to repent. You don't even have to ask for forgiveness. You're forgiven from divine source. You were never judged to begin with. In the instant you wake up to the truth, thy kingdom comes. So I draw from religion in the ways that serve me, and I would encourage everyone to do that, because I know that everyone is of good intent. And the old schoolers think, well, everyone's of bad intent, so you can't trust yourself. And it's like, no. That premise is flawed. And when you get to the truth, your premises are aligned with the truth. You realize that we're all meaning well, and you can then trust yourself as well as other people. And this kind of trusting will bring trustworthy people to your experience, and it will brush those who are not to be trusted to the side. You no longer have anything in common with them. You're no longer resonating or vibrating at their level, and your whole experience is transformed.
You know, I played with that one quite a bit for myself, and one of the things that I noticed is that all at the same time I wasn't trusting other people, I wasn't trusting myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first step for me was learning how to trust myself, you know, trusting my intuition, trusting my own guidance, trusting my own abilities, all of these things. And as I grew in being able to trust myself, then all of a sudden more people
We're not saying, you know, to give everyone the keys to your house. It's like, you know, trust yourself. And there's people who are at a place in their learning curve who shouldn't have the keys to your house or your heart on a silver platter. Follow your own inner guidance and you will be guided wisely. And moreover, when you couple that with a realization of the goodness of people and humanity, you will then bring new people into your life who can be trusted with your emotions, with your openness, with your true soul.
So one of the things that I want to touch on before we go, because we've got about 15 minutes left, is, and then mainly because there's a lot of people playing in this pool right now, and that is understanding adversity. There's a lot of stuff going on for people everywhere, and I mean, we all bump into this at some point in our life, and we have touched on this already, but I want to go a little bit deeper. How do we support ourselves when we're in the midst of adversity?
Well, it's a dicey thing, and nothing I can say would necessarily put a smiley face on a hard-earned frown, you know, when there's been a horrible violation and you know the kind of things I'm talking about,
yep.
Whether it was recent or as a child, nothing I say justifies violations. But what I try to get at in that chapter called Understanding Adversity is that when you stand far enough back from any occurrence, far enough back, and I'm talking about in some cases it's necessary to stand way back, mm-hmm. way out of the context of time and space, but from a context of eternity and love and et cetera. Then when you see the incident in its full-blown context, you will always become aware that there was some kind of order, that there was some kind of healing going on. However horrific the experience was, there was some kind of lesson being learned, sounds kind of trite.
Yes.
There was some kind of love involved. And moreover, like I said a minute ago, if you can't see that yet, it's okay. Don't dwell on it. Know that God doesn't make mistakes. And know that you've never been anywhere that you didn't, for some reason of your own, fearlessly go. Ultimately, you get to a realization from this chapter, my intent is, that you realize that there's really no such thing as a victim. There are just courageous volunteers. And whether or not you understand every nuance of being a volunteer or the courage that was involved or the love that was involved on your behalf if you were violated, no doubt the good was done, the lessons were learned, not so much by you, but by the perpetrator. Whether or not that's obvious is irrelevant. And all is well. You still have today. You still have eternity. You still have your power. You've not been made less. These are the things to focus on. Again, that might sound insignificant to those who are still feeling great, enormous pain. And I'm not trying to diminish their pain. And I'm not saying pain doesn't exist. But what kind of I head that chapter off with is a question that used to haunt me. When you look at life's splendor and magnificence, it is truly beyond the human brain to comprehend. There's 10 sextillion stars at a minimum. 10 sextillion means is the result of 100 billion times 100 billion. That's 10 sextillion. I had to do the math and do some Wikipedia when I was putting this material together. But that's how many stars God, if you will, let's just use the word God, created. That's not talking about planets. Of this one, there's 100 million species on this one itsy-bitsy planet amongst 10 sextillion stars. God, countless other stars, planets exist. But yet of this one, 100 million species, each species magnificent. Whales that communicate by song 2,000 miles away to other whales. Birds that take off from Siberia and fly to Australia 8,000 miles for warmer weather, most of their flying done while they sleep. Caterpillars that fall asleep only to wake up as butterflies. The beauty, the magnificence, the intricacies, the harmony, the way it all ties together, the way we're all one, so boggles the mind. In spite of all of that, why do bad things happen? And it's like, wait, the God that fathomed this planet, the majesty, did he, she, it make a mistake? Is having this magnificence, does it come about by the need for the freedom that there could be ugliness? Is that a necessity, ugliness, mistakes, pain? So is it a necessity? Why? Couldn't the mind, the intelligence, the brilliance that created the jungles of time and space have done it in a way to eliminate all quote-unquote bad things? And the answer is yes, and it did. And the question, why do bad things happen in the jungles of time and space, is fatally flawed because it presumes that bad things happen. Now, again, I'm not justifying stuff that's painful, but when you stand far enough back from the equation of such bad things, you realize that there were volunteers. You realize that there was that all have eternity before them. You realize that there's a healing going on or attempts at healing going on. You realize that love is holding it all together. And then you realize from that way out context that bad things, as we define them bad, do not happen. And that conclusion makes sense. makes sense in light of the brilliance, makes sense in light of the beauty, the sophistication, the 10 sextillion stars. Bad things don't happen. Although when we're going through something, like I thought I was going through a life train crash 10 years ago, it can seem that insight is totally bonkers. But with hindsight, like in my case, I could look back and there was no train crash. It was the beginning of a bigger dream coming true. And you could do this with any experience in your life. It was always something that adds to something perhaps that you cannot yet fathom or grasp. But there was healing, there was love, and you have not been diminished for what has happened.
Well, I know that is 100% the truth for me, because as we've discussed before and I've shared many times on this show, I am a survivor. I am a thriver. I use the term differently. I'm a thriver of abuse. If you'd have told me this, you know, I'm not going to say how many years ago.
Uh-huh.
I would have said you're insane, and I probably would have, you know, said a couple colorful words and that kind of thing. But as time went on, you know, it took me 15 years to heal.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean,
and for some it might take much, much, much longer.
It can happen in an instant, and sometimes it takes time. And for me, it did take time. And for me, the way I define it is you have your victim, which is where you're in the midst of the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really good at that. I made a beautiful victim. Then there's a survivor, which it no longer hurts me.
Wow.
And then for me, thriver
good
is
job.
When I can see the gifts in the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, those were for me the three stages. So to me, that speaks directly and clearly to what you have shared here, because while I wouldn't wish my experience on anyone, I wouldn't trade it either.
Wow. Wow, that says so much. And I've met so many people who have been through horrible things, from diseases, deadly diseases, to, you know, violations of the worst order. And again, I hear that chorus, you know, and I think I my company is typically people like you and people who understand these vaster concepts of spirituality, the same kind of thing. I would not trade it for anything. And that means you're at a place where you can see the gifts. But as I said earlier, even if you can't see the gifts, they were bestowed to you and all involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can get back to realizing it is a beautiful world, that all is well, and that you still have the rest of your life, the best of your life, ahead of you.
See, and that's one of my favorite sayings. All is well, and it always is.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is.
And I have a really good affirmation that I've been using. It's one that I state a lot, and I love that the universe serves it up and says, yeah, you're right. things always work out for me.
They do, and that's well said, and they do for everyone. They always have. It's not like you need to know this stuff and then you can make use of it. It's being made use of now. Things have always worked out for the best, and they're working out for the best now, and they'll continue to work out for the best, whether or not we can wrap our heads around it with our, you know, limited perspectives here within the illusions.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, playing with that little phrase, because I've been playing with it for quite some time, the universe has been serving up little ones, big ones, you know, all different sizes, colors, and shapes. I mean, we just went out and bought an electric shovel for my husband's
parents. I didn't know there was such a thing.
Well, you know, you probably don't need it down there.
No, in Florida, we're okay.
But it's a really neat little thing, and my husband's parents are in their 70s, so we thought, you know, this would be great because they still want their independence, right?
Uh-huh.
But
uh-huh.
So this allows that. And that was the intention behind it. So we're like looking for it, and home hardware is out of it, and we're driving away from there, and I remind myself, yeah, but things always work out for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the next store that we hit, we're walking through there, and my husband's going, yeah, I don't think it's here. And I just turn my head down one of the aisles, and there is the last one sitting there.
Wow.
And I'm laughing to myself. I'm like, see, things always work out for me.
They do. They do. And the more you say that and notice it, the more you experience it. It's like, you know, it's like anything. The more you place your focus on it, the more you bring it about. And, you know, people will often ask me, you know, what about your down times, your bad days? How do you deal with your negative thoughts? And it's like, you know, I have all of those things, but they register as such little blips compared to, you know, perhaps when I had more old school thoughts in my head, or better, when I had question marks in my head, like why and how and dang it, and if I didn't do this, that wouldn't happen, or if I did this, or am I sabotaging myself? And it's like, you know, none of that applies anymore. You know, I have my challenges, and I always will. I bless them. They make me more. They all come with gifts. There's never a challenge that's not one that will not. There's never a challenge that won't make you better. You know, mm-hmm. It's not like you have to conquer it or crush it or have a new epiphany. You know, just experiencing it makes you better. And then in that light, you know, stuff happens, and there's, you know, stuff that's, you know, unpredictable that happens, just stepping stones to places that I was thinking about that I didn't know would crop up, but they don't rock my world or send me in a tailspin, because like you said, I know that things are working out, that it's all good. You eventually too, you get these upward spirals, or you become aware of the upward spiral, which are so much more common than the downward spirals that get all the press. And it gets easier and easier, funner, richer, better, everything.
Well, I noticed that when those blips happen for me, it's maybe hours, minutes, hours, maybe days that I'll play mm-hmm. there. And compared to weeks, months, or even years.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. I think, you know, it's a shame, and I'm sure I've been there before in other lives, but we sadly see people who kind of cling to the pain because they feel justified, and they are. You'll always be justified for your emotions, however horrible they are, but all of a sudden the day will finally dawn. It's like, you know, how much fun is this? You know, I'm justified. I've earned the right to cry every day for the rest of my life for my loss or for the violation or whatever, but it's not going to do anything for you. And it's definitely not fun. And the other approach to life is focusing on what's right and what works. You know, all of a sudden you're flooded with more and more little wonderful surprises as every month and year goes by. And so it's like, you know, it pays no dividends. The sympathy you get and the pity you've earned is not worth letting it go and moving forward.
Absolutely. Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, we have come to the end of our time, and I want to make sure that everybody knows that there's plenty of really awesome free stuff at your website, tut.com. We also have, if you are open to supporting Welcome Changes Radio and keeping this free, you can go to tut.com through welcomechanges.com/recommends/tut, and that will help keep Welcome Changes Radio free, but you can go straight there to tut.com if you want to. And you have, if I remember correctly, you actually have a free screensaver too, don't you?
We do. We have gifts for those who come to us from Welcome Changes Radio. We have a screensaver. We have a brand new deluxe screensaver.
Ooh.
And I think I sent you the link. I'm not sure. But if necessary, I can get you information on how to get that.
Okay.
And you can post that at your website. But it's 50 notes from the universe, handpicked, best of the best, with stunning photographs in the background. And you can set it on your computer or laptop for 1 minute or 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and they start rotating when your computer sleeps. It's a screensaver. And we would love to give that to the listeners of Welcome Changes Radio. And I have to say, Velma, you've done an amazing job. We have been longtime friends. You were in a pioneering adventure at tut.com.
Yes.
I met you before my first world tour, and then you came to that event in Calgary, Canada. You volunteered, and
I manifested
it's amazing
you.
To see. Thank you. It's amazing to see how you have grown and thrived, as you say, over these years. Well done.
It's been one heck of an adventure, and I've loved every second of it. And I just have to say that for those of you who are listening, one of the things you just have to get is the perpetual flip calendar.
Oh, have you seen that?
Oh, it's on my desk.
Oh,
it is on my. I'm looking at it right now, and actually, now let's see what I got to see what March 20 or February 20. No, what the heck am I doing? November 23rd. I'm on the wrong side. There we go. I'm not in February yet. I'd like to be, but it'd be almost spring. Okay, November 23rd. Do you know how to give folks what they most want from you without even asking them what it is? In all regards, just be yourself. That's what they were after when they manifested you in their lives. You are truly one of a kind, the universe.
Oh, yes. Well, we're quite pleased with that product. It was literally 2 years in the making, and it came out as good as we could have ever hoped. So thanks.
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's one that's well worth picking up, and it'll make a very beautiful addition to your desk. So thanks for coming and playing with me today, Mike. I had an absolute blast. I'm so grateful that you ran home from the airport just to talk to me.
Well, I wouldn't have missed it. I love sharing time with you, and thanks for all that you're doing, Velma.
And for those of you that come and visit us regularly, we are here every Tuesday, normally at 1 p.m. in the afternoon every Tuesday. And next week, we have Val Hart. Our website is welcomechangesradio.com. And you can share us with your friends. And please consider becoming a supporter to keep Welcome Changes Radio and all of our hundreds of downloads available to everyone for free. Thanks, everyone, and have an absolutely beautiful day.
Tally-ho, and happy Thanksgiving.